I'm Marcy Finkelstein. You're listening to Words and Music on Community Radio WMNF. And this morning's words come from Kim Ritchie. I'm happy to share my conversation. 20 years after putting out her very successful album, Glimmer, Kim has re-recorded all the songs in a more stripped-down version and released A Long Way Back, The Songs of Glimmer. I started talking with her by saying that having less instrumentation changes what the listener focuses on. And I asked Kim what she was hoping we'd find in the new version that maybe we didn't find in the original.
I've never done that before, gone back and re-record songs, because they're kind of like a snapshot of the time. And, you know, I bet most people, when they go back and listen to old albums, they think, oh, I wish I would have done this differently. And by the time you play these songs live for years, they take on a different kind of spin or whatever. But really, we started out, I just wanted to do a little celebration that had been 20 years since that record had come out. And the original plan was to do a guitar vocal thing, really basic, just me playing guitar and singing. And then I had Doug Lancio, who was a producer. He plays everything with strings, and he's just a really, really great player. He's playing guitar with Dylan now. And I just thought, I'm not playing guitar when Doug Lancio is here. There's no reason. It kind of turned into its own thing as we went along. Doug started playing, and then so the only rule we started out with was no drums, because the drums are a pretty big deal on Glimmer. We just wanted to strip the songs back a little bit, so we said no drums, and that was kind of the only rule we had. And then I came in one day to the studio, and I heard drums. I thought Doug was working on the track, and I said, Doug, I thought we weren't going to have any drums. And he just turns around and looks at me, and he goes, drum machine, not drums, and turns back around. I was like, okay, drum machine. And then I come in another day later, and I said, Doug, that sounds like drums again. Are we having drums? And he just turns around, looks at me, he goes, I played them. I'm not a drummer, not drums. So I was like, okay, gotcha. Then we had living next door to us, the fellow who played drums on Papa Was a Rolling Stone. He's a great drummer and a sweetheart of a guy. When we go outside, we talk to him over the fence. And so I came in there. We had a couple songs still to do, and we came in, and he was sitting in there, and I said, hi, guys, what's going on? And he said, well, what do you think about having drums on these last two songs? It just kind of kept going like this until it was a full production and a full album. It was supposed to be something for Record Store Day. It just kind of turned into something more. And it's a shame, like so many other people had had records come out in conjunction with a pandemic. So we had a whole tour like everybody else did planned for the record, and we were going to play the whole album, and we weren't able to do that. But I'm pretty happy with the record. I was worried because people, when you listen to records or albums that meant a lot to you, especially from your past, when they change, sometimes you're not very happy about things changing on you like that. But I got really great positive feedback, so that made me happy.
You said these songs are a snapshot in time. Did you feel singing them again that they still describe you?
I think that they were still me. I'd have to say, sadly, Lay It Down, which was basically an advice song to myself, and going back and singing, it's like, oh, we still need to work on these things, don't we? So the songs had changed, but I hadn't changed. I play a lot of those songs all the time live, so they're with me all the time. It doesn't seem like something that's so far away in the past.
In your song, Can't Lose Them All, you say, I come a little closer to a hit with every miss. And I know the music business is really tough. Did you ever think about leaving it?
I've quit music so many times. In my mind, I was like, oh, I'm done. Then there'll be some little carrot kind of thing. It's like, oh, or you'll have a fantastic gig. Like, I've just played 30A Songwriter Festival in Nashville, and we had the best time. The audience was fantastic, and everybody joined in together on everybody's songs. And I said, this is one of those moments where I think, this is exactly why I do this and why I keep doing it. Shows like this and playing for these kind of people that really appreciate songwriters and, you know, us trying to write the best songs that we can, as opposed to some days, you know, I'll be up there going, oh my word, what went wrong? What happened? Why am I doing this still? So Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the way. I never had any great success. I think people who re-recorded my songs, especially like off of Bittersweet, they had more success with them on country music radio than I did, because they weren't released as singles or whatever.
Is it as rewarding to you to write successful songs for other people as to perform a successful song of yours?
The ones that were kind of hits, if you will, for other people, those aren't the songs so much that are heart songs for me. And it's funny because songs that are popular on the radio and that people are really familiar with, radio songs aren't always the songs that mean the most to people. Like, I was surprised to see, if I look on Spotify, the most popular song of mine is the song A Place Called Home. Really quiet, more sad song, melancholy song. And you never heard that on the radio. It was used on a couple different TV shows and stuff. But those songs mean a lot to people. They aren't just catchy things that the radio decided they would play.
How frustrating is it to know that you've written something good and you're not getting the sales or the seats that other people are getting?
The sales part's not frustrating because I still benefit from all that. Like the song I wrote with a couple of my friends, Believe Me Baby, I Lied. That song was number one song for Trisha Yearwood. And I remember we were playing it live while we were touring on Bittersweet. And people were really liking it, but it just wasn't a song that meant a lot to me. If I ever had a record label, I might just call it Down the Drain or something like that, because I'm terrible at picking out those really popular for everybody kind of songs. Trisha Yearwood, they were really wanting that song. And they kept calling us, or her producers, you know, were calling us and going, we want this song. And my people were kind of like, if it's that popular, let's keep it for me. I said, I'm going to let this song go because Trisha Yearwood will do really well for us. And as songwriters, we would do well financially off of a hit song like Back in the Day, that. And I'm not sure that Believe Me Baby, I Lied is something I want to sing for the rest of my life. That stuff means more to me than the success. Not to say I wouldn't like to be playing theaters and stuff like that rather than listening rooms, but I guess that's just the decisions that you have to make along the way. What's the most important thing to you? And the music is always the most important thing to me.
It sounded like from an interview I read that when you recorded the original album, you didn't enjoy the process, and that this time you did.
I hate that I gave that impression, because it got to be fun, but at first it was frightening because I didn't know any of the musicians, and usually I'd recorded here in town with friends. I didn't even know Hugh really well, that produced the record. It was just so foreign to me the way that we started recording, because everything cost so much. I couldn't believe it. I remember we spent, I think, at least 2 days in the studio with all the musicians there, everybody getting paid and everything, just working on drum sounds. And I was just there going, oh my God, how much is this costing? Then we were having these big platters of like bagels and smoked fish and everything coming in, and nobody was eating it. And I was like, can we at least lose the platters? Which in the grand record scheme of things is nothing. It's not even a drop in the bucket. And I remember the guys are just all sitting around watching TV one day in the lounge, and they're getting drum sounds. I said, wait, you guys want to go over some of the songs while we're just sitting here or something? And I remember they just looked at me like, yeah, no. And I was staying with a friend at the time, and I was sleeping on the pullout bed downstairs. And I remember just laying there in bed going, oh my, I couldn't sleep. And I just think, oh, I've made a huge mistake. How is this ever going to work? And how am I going to get out of this? And nobody from the label called me. And I didn't have a manager at the time. And I just thought, this is not going well. And then as soon as we started recording, it was great because all the guys played really beautiful stuff. And I remember I was messing around with a song one time, and I didn't have my headphones turned up, and I was just playing. And all of a sudden I turned up my headphones, and here's the guys behind me playing this song in a completely different way that I would ever have imagined it. That was the first record where I got to do all kinds of background vocals and think of background vocals as parts rather than a parallel harmony following the lead vocal. So yeah, it started out frightening and then ended up really great.
So a long way back. It really does seem like a long way back.
It does. You know, I was thinking about stuff the other day. I think this pandemic has a lot of people taking stock and looking back over your life and everything, because remember during the lockdown, you're hearing from old friends you haven't heard from in ages. And I was just thinking back, and was I really that person? And did that stuff really happen? You know, I have pictures, but it really does seem, I don't even hardly recognize that other person from so long ago sometimes.
You said that you were pretty brokenhearted when you wrote most of the songs on Glimmer. What was going on?
I was falling out with somebody. Yeah, it was really kind of a sad time for me. I wasn't even sure I was going to make another record, really. I didn't feel like doing anything. You know, I was just feeling sorry for myself. And then I kind of got more excited about music again. I met some new people to write with and got invited to a castle in France, this songwriter's retreat. And that's where I wrote Can't Lose Them All with Maya Sharp and Paul Thorne, who I talked to this week, and we played the song together on his, he's doing a podcast, and we recorded the song together for his podcast. But the three of us wrote it there, and so I got to meet all these people. I've met a couple people there that are still my bestie pals after all these years, and kind of got re-excited about writing and meeting new people and making music again.
So Can't Lose Them All came true.
I guess it did.
Kim Ritchie, Can't Lose Them All, co-written, as she says, with Maya Sharp and Paul Thorne. And Kim will be coming to town in the fall. She's playing the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center in October.